This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, economic activity is slowing, adding to fears of a recession. And the Federal Reserve continues to raise interest rates to fight inflation. An economist joins the show to break it all down and help make sense of what's going on in the economy. Now, the Respect for Marriage Act is making its way through Congress. The bill would repeal the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act and protect the right to marry nationwide, regardless of sex, race, or ethnicity. It passed the U.S. House last week, now on to the Senate, where it needs 10 Republican votes to pass. So far, five GOP senators, including Wisconsin's Ron Johnson, have said they won't vote to block the bill. Others say they're still reviewing the bill or that it's unnecessary. Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin introduced the Respect for Marriage Act in the Senate. She's been working to find more Republican support. I talked to her earlier today. Can you talk about the need, as you see it, to pursue this legislation, this Respect for Marriage Act, right now?
Yes. Well, in light of the U.S. Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade, there are a number of other areas where rights and responsibilities and freedoms seem to be in jeopardy. The case overturning Roe versus Wade implicates issues like access to contraception, same-sex marriage and interracial marriage, and a number of other areas where the court found fundamental rights and freedoms in the Constitution. All of those have been upended by the court, the court's decision in overturning Roe versus Wade. And so people who are married as a result of the Obergefell decision, legalizing marriage equality, legalizing same-sex marriage, are quite anxious about the certainty of their marriages. And so we want to address this promptly by eliminating from the federal statutes the Defense of Marriage Act, and making it clear that a marriage that has been validly entered into in the state in which it was entered into will be respected in every state and by the federal government by virtue of the full faith and credit provision of the Constitution.
On a practical level, this will need 60 votes in the Senate to avoid a filibuster. And you, I understand, are taking some of the lead here in recruiting some of the 50 Republicans. What has that effort been like so far?
It is a very hopeful effort, I will say. As I have individual conversations with Republican colleagues, it is gratifying to hear them, in most cases, take the issue very seriously, ask questions. Certainly, our discussion about the time sensitivity of this is one that's coming up a lot. But I'm pleased to report that we have five Republicans who have publicly indicated their support for the Respect for Marriage Act. And in conversations, I'm pretty close to having five additional members who have expressed their support privately, not wanting to go public until the vote occurs.
Your Wisconsin colleague, Senator Ron Johnson, says he won't block this, though he's described it as unnecessary and fear-mongering in effect. And I understand you were in earshot of your colleague from Florida, Senator Rubio, describing it as a stupid and a waste of time. What do you say to your colleagues who are making this case that, hey, this is just unnecessary, it's not going to get overturned, don't worry about it?
So predicting the actions of the Supreme Court and predicting the outcomes of cases in the future is not a perfect science. So I think that the country has been so shocked by the overturning of Roe versus Wade after 49 years since the initial decision. It was well settled precedent. And many of the justices on the court currently said as much, that it was well settled precedent, and that they respect precedent. And so I think whatever side you are on with regard to Roe versus Wade, it was a shocking case, and has left these other issues. People are seriously concerned about the certainty of their marriages. People are also concerned about access to contraception moving forward, again, given this case.
We're talking to U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin about the Respect for Marriage Act and its prospects in the Senate. Senator Baldwin, one objection that's come up, including from Republican Congressman from Wisconsin, Mike Gallagher, is that as they see it, the technical parts of this bill could legalize not just same-sex marriage, but polygamy. Have you run into that concern? What do you say to that?
I believe that it's an unfounded concern. I understand an outside group is trying to raise this issue because of the word marriage not being defined in one of the sections of the bill as a relationship between two individuals. But what I would point to in federal statutes is multiple occurrences of the word marriage without that constriction. And we know that there has never been an interpretation to allow marriage between more than two people. And in fact, such marriages are not recognized in any state in the union, nor are they recognized by the federal government. And in cases where there have been individuals from overseas who from different cultures and countries, I know that those marriages have not been recognized in the United States either.
Now, you're the first openly gay senator in U.S. history. How are your own experiences factoring into the conversations you're having with your colleagues on this bill?
I have been working on issues around marriage and civil unions and domestic partnerships since the mid-1990s. And so watching the progression in the 50 states, watching the litigation that has occurred over time in states and at the federal level gives me a deep knowledge of this issue. But there's also the personal side, which is knowing so many who had to go to great lengths to write out contracts and other legal documents to protect their families, to replicate what marriage rights and responsibilities they could in legal documents, and not all of them can be replicated. So if you think about things like access to your spouse, if they've just been injured and taken an ambulance to the hospital, there, if you are not married, if you are a legal stranger, you have no right to get information about your loved one's condition. And you don't even have a right to go and visit and attend to them by their bedside. Think of how horrible that was before marriage equality was the law of the land. And that's just one of really hundreds of examples of the rights and responsibilities that a marriage confers. And so I bring that knowledge to my conversations with colleagues. I think too many times when they're thinking about the word marriage, they're thinking about the ceremony, the wedding. But I'm thinking about this set of legal rights and responsibilities that are conferred with a marriage certificate and marriage that for, you know, before Obergefell was decided, were not accessible to same-sex couples.
Senator Baldwin, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin is backing the Respect for Marriage Act, currently awaiting a vote in the Senate. We talked to her earlier today about the bill and her work to find support from her Republican colleagues. Coming up, an economist joins the show to break down the many signals coming from the economy right now, what it all means for where it could be headed, and the risk of a recession. You can join in right now at 800-642-1234. Are you still seeing high prices when you shop? Have you pulled back on spending lately? How do you feel about the economy right now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up that conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Coming up, a film critic joins the show to share his take on some of the biggest movies out this summer and to preview some exciting movies in the next few months. First, the Federal Reserve raised interest rates 0.75% yesterday in its latest effort to tamp down inflation. The Fed's trying to cool off the economy just enough to get inflation under control without cooling it off so much that it triggers a recession. But new numbers out today show a drop in gross domestic product, or GDP. That's adding to questions about whether we could be in a recession now or whether we might be in the near future. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Yaman Ahmed is a professor of economics at UW-Whitewater. Yaman, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Appreciate it.
Let's look at today's news first. The GDP down a bit. Inflation was part of the story there. 2 quarters in a row. Now, some sort of shoestring definition say that's a recession right there. 2 down quarters in a row. What do you make of it?
It's the 2 quarters successive quarters is sort of like a rule of thumb that a lot of people try to follow and kind of use that to kind of gauge how's the economy doing? If we're in a downturn, that's what they may be looking at. But in the U.S., it's kind of interesting because that's not the official way that I guess they actually make a determination for whether a recession is happening or not. There's a group at the NBER called the Business Cycle Dating Committee who actually look not just at just measures of output like GDP, but they look at a whole bunch of different things. They look at things like personal incomes, they look at employment, they look at how much people are spending in terms of consumption expenditures, they look at all these different kind of things, and then they try and make a determination. So the US is kind of interesting in that way because it's the NBER that actually classifies, hey, a recession's happened or not, or we're in an expansion. And they typically do that a little bit after the data's come in. So right now the data is coming in, of course, as you said today, we had our initial preliminary estimate for the second quarter of 2022, and that's showing that for the second time in a row, I guess, that GDP fell. But the picture is actually kind of mixed because while some things in the economy, like GDP, are showing, you know, that there's negative outlook for the economy, there are some things that are showing positive outlook for the economy. And so it's kind of interesting times that we're in right now.
What are some of the positives that might make people feel hesitant to say, yeah, recession now?
Well, some of the things that obviously, you know, as you mentioned, there's some negative things like inflation and output. But one of the things that we're seeing is that employment is actually doing well. So if you're looking at the labor market, for example, unemployment is still really low across the nation. On average, it's pretty low. If you're looking at employment, like the number of new jobs being created each month, that's still going strong. Typically we tend to think of a strong, healthy economy as one where this is like about 200,000 jobs being created a month. We're exceeding that, you know, those numbers. Certainly in the labor market, there's some evidence to suggest that you know, the economy is still actually doing fairly well. Also with household spending has still been going up despite that. And if you're looking at, for example, like just after the pandemic, savings really increased because people worried about whether they would be laid off or other things. And we're not seeing that. Savings has sort of come down, but an actual expenditure seemed to be still increasing despite what people might feel. But there's a mixture, as I said, there's a mixture of positive and negative pieces of evidence. And it's sort of like a puzzle for us economists to try and figure out what's exactly going on right now.
All right. So, Yaman, that was today's big economic news, those GDP numbers. Let's look at yesterday's big economic news.
Sure.
Now, the Federal Reserve saying, yeah, I think this is a big, a 0.75 increase,
yes,
in the interest rate.
Yes.
I don't know. Is there buyer's remorse? We put out this jump in the interest rate, and then we see the GDP went down a bit?
No, it'd be too quick for that to happen.
Well, right.
The GDP numbers would be, I mean, obviously with the GDP numbers, we're kind of collecting the data over the last 3 months, right, and seeing what's happened there. But with the Fed's, you know, has this dual mandate where they, you know, care about what's happening with inflation, as well as what's happening with unemployment or maximum employment. Full employment is what they're looking for. And so with that, like I said, the employment picture is good, but right now they're trying to deal with the inflationary pressures in the economy. So they've been raising interest rates. And again, as you said, the 75 basis points, a 0.75% increase yesterday, certainly is going to have an impact, on the economy in terms of making it more costly to borrow. And so people who are, you know, it affects all these other kind of interest rates that you see, for example, like mortgage rates. It affects, interest rate on credit cards. It affects, even student loans and other adjustable rate mortgages, or anything that's adjustable. Those will all change as the Federal Reserve is raising. And of course, that's going to make it more expensive to borrow. And the Fed's going in there with the idea of trying to slow down spending a little bit so that it doesn't create that inflationary pressure. But the Fed's kind of also walking a tightrope because if they raise it too quickly, it could push the economy into recession. But at the same time, they're going for what they're calling the soft landing and hopefully trying to tame inflation without creating too much unemployment. All right. And that's sort of like the main trade-off that they're facing. But it's tricky. Right now, they're walking very close. It's a tightrope for them. So.
UW-Whitewater economics professor Yaman Ahmed is with us looking at lots of economic news. GDP down a bit for two quarters in a row now. Federal Reserve bumping up interest rates a little more. Plus, there's inflation. And Yaman, we've got that bump up from the Federal Reserve, the interest rate. This GDP down a bit. I mean, is that something, this news out today, something that might bring down inflation? Hey, maybe this will not be such bad news after all if, in fact, it helps bring down inflation.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how the public at large interpret that information and how they react to it, because a large part of what drives inflation is, you know, people's expectations of what inflation are going to be in the future. So if the Fed really, if the perception is that inflation is out of control, it'll be really hard to bring down. And so it starts affecting things like, you know, households, perceptions of the future actually impact their decisions that they're making today. So if they're thinking, oh, things are getting more expensive, I might want to start saving a bit rather than spending because I need to tighten up because, you know, prices are going up so much. You know, that could actually in some ways have a detrimental effect. It could slow down the economy quite a lot. So it's a large part of it is trying to understand how the public at large is interpreting these signals that the economy is giving and, you know, what they're hearing in the news and then how they're reacting to it in terms of how they affect their own expenditure habits, whether they're tightening up, tightening the belt buckle or, are they doing as they are? And it'll be different across, you know, for everybody across in terms of how they react. And part of that and part of the thing for policymakers is like the Federal Reserve, people at the Fed, is trying to see how their announcements are also being interpreted and how people are reacting when they're basing those policy decisions. So it's a tricky balance to try and achieve for sure.
we're in weird territory here. And one of the reasons I've heard from other economists anyway is the weird supply chain shocks that started with the beginning of the pandemic back in 2020. We're still seeing them as, Chinese production towns shut down, Russia invasion of Ukraine hitting supply. How much of these different threads here tie into that supply chain concern?
Oh, very much quite a lot, because the Fed's response, for example, as we're talking about, will have to depend on whether the inflation that we're seeing is really coming from the demand side of the economy or the supply side of the economy. If it's coming from the demand side of the economy, the tools that they normally have can deal with it quite effectively. But if it's coming from the supply, as we're sort of seeing through the supply chain issues, through the things that are happening in the rest of the world, it creates a sort of dilemma for the Federal Reserve, because if the Fed does tighten, on one side they could raise interest rates really quickly, and that would tamper down on inflation, but it could really create a bad recession. But if they're worried about the recession at the same time and are not tampering down hard enough, then inflation could still remain out of control. So that's sort of like the tightrope they're working. But certainly the supply chain issues, everything on the production side, and that's adding to the cost of production. Even we're seeing more recently, wage growth. And that wage growth, because of course we're seeing inflation, there's a lag effect, and wages are slowly starting to rise, and that will maybe contribute to further inflation down the road. So it's a lot of different sources that's coming together in conjunction at one point, and policymakers are having a tough road ahead.
Yaman, we'll leave it there. Thanks for helping us piece this all together.
Sure, of course.
That's Yaman Ahmed, professor of economics at UW-Whitewater. He joined us today to talk about the many mixed signals in the U.S. economy and concerns about a possible recession, with a second quarter in a row now with a decline in the GDP. That new information out today. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show, some home security doorbells with the cameras on them are being used by police, sometimes without consent of the owners. Find out how this new technology matches up with our current laws and expectations on privacy and surveillance. And, of course, you can join in with your own experiences and your opinions. That's tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Coming up in just a few minutes, Reggie the Real Critic is back with us for a look at the summer movie season, and you could share your favorite new movies. Meanwhile, you've been sharing movies you like to rewatch from a conversation we had earlier this week. Here are some more of the movies that you like to watch again and again, collected on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Here we go. Barney says The Best Years of Our Lives. Marianne keeps going back to Fargo and Midnight Cowboy. Jen says The Princess Bride and A Fish Called Wanda. I think that's the second one for both of those. Scott, I Know Where I'm Going, The Third Man, a classic, and The Red Shoes. We've got Kathy watching What About Bob again and again. I'll admit, Kathy, I didn't make it through What About Bob once. But hey, no judgment. Eric, here's another Third Man, Double Indemnity, Arsenic, and Old Lace. Brandy says so many right now. My favorite is Interstellar. Arlene, Young at Heart, David, The Mission, and The Hunt for Red October. Scott has a few. The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, Eddie Humphrey Bogart, Last of the Mohicans with Daniel Day-Lewis. So many great movie recommendations. Find them on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. The summer movie season is underway, and for critics and movie lovers, there are a few new releases that have been hotly anticipated. Nope is the latest horror movie from Jordan Peele, director of Get Out, and Where the Crawdads Sing is the movie adaptation of a best-selling novel by Delia Owens. We're rounding up some of the new movies out there right now, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen any new movies this summer? We'll extend summer back to, April or May, if you would like. Is there one on your list that you're excited about or want to hear more about? Have you seen the new Thor movie? How about that Top Gun that's been racking up big money? Have you seen Nope? And if so, did it deliver on scary science fiction weirdness? If you're a fan of the book Where the Crawdads Sing, how does the movie compare? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Reggie Ponder is a film critic, also known as Reggie the Real Critic. He appears weekly on Vocalo in Chicago and critiques movies for several other media outlets. You can follow him on Twitter at Reggie the Real Critic. Reggie, welcome back to the show.
Rob, how are you?
I'm pretty good. As always, Reggie, you watch the movies, then I live them vicariously through you. You know how this works. How is the summer movie season looking for you overall, big picture?
For me, big picture, nothing really, really wowed me for this summer. But from a box office perspective, we're only about 12% off from 2019. So the people were anxious to get out. They're going out to see the movies, and it looks pretty decent so far.
It seems like there's not this parade of blockbusters like we see this summer. Is that right?
That's exactly how it feels to me. When you look at the top 10 movies out there, and I'll just name them really quickly, you get Top Gun, which you talked about, mm-hmm. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, Jurassic World Dominion, Minions, The Rise of Gru, Thor, Love and Thunder, Elvis, Lightyear, The Black Phone, and Nope. And I guess people felt that Jurassic World Dominion would be a blockbuster, maybe Thor, Love and Thunder. Of course, Top Gun is the number one movie for the year so far, with over $640 million domestically, and it's, well, I think, $1.2 million when you look at it internationally. So, but nothing, none of these are movies where we're back in that time where you're talking about at least $500 million to $1 million.
Let's talk Thor for a sec. I dimly recall, Reggie, that Thor Ragnarok, you didn't like it that much. It was just like the zaniness didn't work for you. How does this new one, the Love and Thunder Thor movie, compare?
Wow, Rob, you remember that.
I remember things.
So I think that Thor is the right character to kind of bring some of that zaniness. I just am not sure that the writers and Marvel have really figured out Thor's identity that well, in my opinion. And so when you look at something like Guardians of the Galaxy, they brought that zaniness in a way that really worked with all those characters, and I really, really liked it. And I was hoping that with Thor Love and Thunder that they would recalibrate in some kind of way and be able to bring that. And they led with the humor. There was still a lot of action in it, and so for the most part it was a decent film. But I still think they missed on the humor part, and maybe the audience felt the same, because domestically Thor only made $285 million at the box office.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hello.
Hi. Well, I saw Elvis. And I really liked the young actor that played Elvis. I thought he had the body movements and his image of Elvis, I thought, was really good. I found Tom Hanks to be very disagreeable. I mean, as a character, he played Colonel Tom Parker, you know. But I'm wondering what Reggie thinks of that movie.
Okay, thanks. I said, I don't think Tom Hanks played Elvis, did he? But what did you think of Elvis, Reggie?
That's why you need to go to the movies, Rob. but anyway, I agree with her. Is that the young man who played Elvis was really, really good. He had the mannerisms and all of that. I think that trying to look at this from Tom Hanks, the character that Tom Hanks played, which was really his manager's perspective, I felt kind of diluted a little bit of the excitement that you want to see when you are talking about Elvis and what Elvis brought to music. But I think they were smart, is that they did a couple of things. One of the things they did with this movie is to make sure that they addressed the issue of Elvis and where his music came from. The fact that he liked black music and he, covered a lot of black songs, because that had always been a criticism of Elvis particularly, and they made sure in this movie that that was addressed, and that he had friendships with a lot of people in the black music community. So I like this overall. I would have liked it to be more about Elvis than about the management of Elvis, but I think that the acting in this was good.
Thanks for calling in, Kay. We are talking to Reggie, the real critic, Reggie Ponder, looking at the movies of this summer. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen a new movie over the last couple few months, or is there something on your radar you're excited about or you want to know more about? Call 800-642-1234. All right, you mentioned Nope. Reggie, my kids have seen this. I will see it, I promise. I want to listen to a clip now from the movie. Daniel Kaluuya and Kiki Palmer play brother and sister OJ and M. Here's a scene where the two of them spot, and I got to say, my kids have reenacted this scene in the car a little bit. They're suspicious of clouds. They see something in the sky.
It's in a cloud. OJ! It's in a cloud!
As the Jordan Peele movie, Nope. Reggie, I understand that you maybe don't want to tell us too much about what's going on. It might spoil our enjoyment a little. What can you tell us about Nope?
Yes, it is very little that you can tell people about this movie without kind of spoiling the experience and what Jordan Peele is bringing to the screen. I'll tell you, it looked like a Western. It played like a horror film. And it had elements of science fiction. And the thing to know about this movie is that there's something out there that this family sees, and they're going to try to find out what it is and get the what they're calling the Oprah shot, that picture that you could put in any big magazine or wherever you, so they can make money off of it. And that's going to cause them a lot of problems along the way. It's scary. It's interesting. It definitely has the science fiction pieces to it. But then Jordan Peele does what Jordan Peele does, is he adds in so many layers that some people will leave thinking, what was he trying to say? And that's problematic sometimes, because you either want to watch the movie and enjoy it for its entertainment value, or you're trying to figure out what are all the messages. And sometimes the entertainment can get muddied by trying to figure out all the messages. I will tell you, Rob, I saw the movie in Charlotte because I so happened to be there. And there was a group of young people in their 20s debating what it meant. And so they liked it, but they still were confused because they were like, well, what did the shoe mean? What did the this mean? And I don't want to say too much. And I think that that's sometimes problematic, because you do want to just enjoy the movie for its entertainment value. But kudos to Jordan for a number one movie, because it was number one at the box office with $44 million at the box office.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Shelly is with us in West Allis. Shelly, hi.
Hey, guys. I'm really enjoying your opinion on Nope. I did see it. I kind of kept falling asleep on it. It was going real slow, but overall, the movie was, I loved the story. But, you know, I found the editing was really poor, and that's what, to me, made the movie kind of not so great. But overall, the story was great, but the film editor, whoever that was, didn't do a very good job. I mean, I saw some mistakes, like when the UFO or whoever, what, the flying saucer, you could actually see the fabric, and I just thought it made it very unrealistic. So Nope was a Nope for me, but I was glad to go and see it. I paid full price, which was almost $19, because I just couldn't wow. wait to see it, because the trailer had me like a clip. I was hanging on a clip just waiting for this movie to come out. I couldn't wait for it to go to the $5, like Market Cinema, $5 Tuesday. I couldn't wait. Like I said, I kept falling asleep, and I thought, oh, that's wow. how I rate movies. I said, if I fall asleep, it's not very good. And I kept falling asleep, so. But I would like to bring up a movie a couple summers ago before the pandemic came, which was The Invisible Man. I loved that movie. It was so great. I remember screaming a few times. It had me jumping. Those kind of movies I love.
All right. Shelly, thanks for the call. Shelly does see the horror movies some, but you're a thumbs up. Reggie sounds like she's more of a thumbs down on Nope.
Yeah, I like the Nope, but I totally understand, as I said, that there's this mixture of, do I understand it, do I not? And it does move a little bit slow, but I think that sometimes because it moves slow doesn't mean that it's a sleeper. It just means that they're trying to set up some things. And the question is, do you think that they set it up well? And she didn't, and I totally respect that.
Thanks for the call, Shelley. We're talking to Reggie Ponder, a.k.a. Reggie the Real Critic, with us today to talk about new movies out this summer, what's coming up in the next couple months. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What have you seen, like it or not? What are you excited to see? What do you want to ask about? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with film critic Reggie Ponder about new movies out this summer. You can join in with ones you've seen or want to see at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Share a recommendation. Get a recommendation. Back to your calls now. Cheryl is with us in Eau Claire. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi there. I feel like I'm being bombarded with comic book hero movies or sequel movies. I'm missing those Sleepless in Seattle kind of movies, or Breakthrough, or La Bamba. Is there something coming up that's out of that kind of ordinary?
I gotcha, no. Cheryl. Yeah, is Cheryl out of luck, Reggie, or is there something out there for her?
No, actually, Cheryl is going to be in luck. In terms of the fall season, will have a lot of movies that will be in the realm of counter programming, and not those big. You won't get any of those big superheroes or sequel movies. I will say this before I just mention some of them, is that even when you look at the summer fair, that there were a few movies that they tried to do that counter programming with. Elvis was one of those, because it really wasn't a big, you know, obviously not a sequel and not a superhero movie. You look at Where the Crawdads Sing, the same thing. Downton Abbey, it's a sequel, but it was new, something different. So the studios do recognize that they have to do things that have something for other folks. And so some of the movies that will be coming up are The Woman King, which is in September the 16th. Don't Worry, Darling, which is September the 23rd, excuse me. There's a few others, and I'm just losing them at this moment. But there are a number of movies coming out that are not those big, big movies. There's one called Bodies, 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 A Beast is coming out, which I'm really looking forward to seeing on August the 19th. It's not that Sleepless in Seattle kind of movie. It's a little bit scary. To
now
tell
watch
the
trailer. It's like Sleepless in Seattle, but there's a lion attacking everybody.
right. There's no sleeping on that one. No. I don't think you want to be asleep when that lion comes after you. But there will be lighter fare for sure, and that's going to test the box office. In fact, and the reason it is because a lot of these more counter programming movies, people are starting to watch it on their streaming services, saying, do I really want to go in to the theater to see these other movies that you don't have to see on the big screen?
Cheryl, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Glad we can give you some options. You mentioned, Reggie, Where the Crawdads Sing. Let's check out a bit of this. Here, the Kea, the main character, played by Daisy Edgar Jones, and Taylor John Smith plays one of her love interests, Tate. Here's a listen.
Am I your girlfriend now?
Do you want to be?
I know feathers. The other girls don't know feathers.
All right, then.
So you didn't read the book, Reggie, I understand, but some people who have read the book were maybe disappointed by the movie?
That's what I would like to know. I will tell you is that when you look at Rotten Tomatoes, the critics overall, and I'm included in it, didn't love this movie. I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. It wasn't one of those movies for me that I felt like I had to see in the theater. This was one of those movies that I wish I had streamed and would have been fine at home with my wife, watching, having some popcorn, doing that type of thing. However, the audience totally disagrees. When you look at Rotten Tomatoes, the critics were at 34%, but the audience was at 96%. So that tells me that a lot of people who probably read the book really felt that this was representative of that. It felt a little bit Harlequin romance-y to me, and I might be dating myself because I don't even know if Harlequin romances are out anymore, but it felt a little bit like that to me.
We are talking to Reggie Ponder, Reggie the Real Critic, about summer movies, ones that are out, ones that are coming out. Still time if you'd like to get in at 800-642-1234 with your picks and pans, with your questions as well, 800-642-1234. Minions, The Rise of Gru, I think this is one you've seen, Reggie?
Yeah, I saw that. But if I can, Rob, I just want to make one other comment about Where the Crawdads Sing.
Oh, yeah.
Is that it's beautifully shot to me. If you are looking to be kind of transported into that kind of environment, I think the acting was good. It's beautifully shot. It just felt like there was just something missing to elevate it to that next level. But I just had to say that it looks really good. It's a really good looking movie.
Excellent. Okay, so Minions, The Rise of Gru, I'm imagining probably never going to be a double feature with the Crawdad movie.
No, it's not going to be a double feature. And this might be one that most adults will want to skip. This is a movie about a young kid who wants to be a super villain, not a superhero. And he finds a group of super villains. He tries to join their club. They wouldn't let him join their club. So he becomes the superest, baddest super villain out there. And there's this chase to figure out, will he stay that way or will he learn something different? And, you know, these types of movies are all about teachable moments. And it was fun. It was a fun movie. So if you're dragged to it, which many parents probably will be, you'll be like, okay, I got it. Will you love it when you walk out of theater? No, but I think that young people will like it because it stays with the theme of the Minions and expands it just a little enough that it doesn't get away from the core part of that franchise.
Now, coming out now-ish is one I think you're planning to see soon, Reggie, Bullet Train. I just happened to see a trailer for this one. A lot of names in this one anyway.
There are a lot of names. And of course, at the top of that list is Brad Pitt. And this is about five assassins who are aboard a fast-moving bullet train. And they find out that their missions all have something in common. And if you look at the trailer, there's a lot of fighting. So this is a, it feels like it's part comedy and part action. And I'm all in. I can't wait to see it. I hope it's as good as and as funny and as interesting and interactive as it looks on the trailer. I see this one on Monday, so I'll have a better sense of that. But I'm definitely looking forward to this.
I want to take a couple minutes, Reggie. You know, there's fall movies come out. We'll probably have you out on again to talk about those fall movies. We asked people earlier this week about movies they like to rewatch and go back and watch again and again. A lot of people shared theirs with us. What are yours, ones you like to rewatch?
Well, so top on my list is the Bourne trilogy, the Gerard Butler one. That's number four. No, but then the fifth one. Yes. Anything on that Bourne list. I really, really like those movies.
So does it have to have the Matt Damon character as the Bourne?
Absolutely. Matt Damon absolutely killed in this one. Did you like this?
Those I have seen, and I have actually rewatched them with my kids as they were teens. Those were a lot of fun. Sometimes the, like, you know, out of focus, blurry action, I'm gesturing like a crazy action fight scene here. Sometimes that was a little much for me, but otherwise I did like those.
So I really like that. And then totally on the opposite end of the spectrum is Notting Hill. I love this movie. I'm just a girl standing in front of a boy asking him to love me. How can you not have some tears and just get? They had a really great way of having a great cast that was quirky, and it all worked. Every character in it worked out so well. I really like that movie. So I'll watch it anytime that it comes on. And sometimes I'll pop it in myself. And then the last one that I'll throw in, because I know we're running out of time, is a movie, Love and Basketball. And I love that movie as well. I like basketball, as you know. And then I like love as well. So those movies that I mentioned, I would watch almost anytime.
All right, wrapping up, Reggie, of the movies we've talked about so far or any other that's out right now, somebody says, hey, I want to see a movie this weekend. I'll take whatever you give me. What do you give them?
Okay, I'm going to tell people to if you're adventurous from a scary perspective, to check out Nope. I will put that warning on it, saying that it might be for you, it might not, but if you're in that horror sci-fi genre, Nope might be the movie for you. The other movie, which I haven't seen, which is Bullet Train, I'm pretty positive that it's going to be fun and exciting and stupid and all that stuff that you think that the trailer shows. So I would check that out as well. And then for people who are looking for that love story, Where the Crawdads Sings seems to be one of those fan favorites. Again, 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. So who am I to say don't go see it?
Reggie, thanks as always for joining us.
My pleasure.
That's Reggie Ponder. Reggie, the real critic, with us today to talk about some of the new movies he's loving or liking, okay, at least this summer. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, sometimes the best way to help yourself is to help others, and there's science to back that up. Find out more with the author of Wonder Drug, 7 Scientifically Proven Ways That Serving Others Is the Best Medicine for Yourself. That's tomorrow on Central Time.